Well, we all like Bible quizzes, and I've got a little quiz. We all watch those quizzes on TV. So I want to start with a little quiz question. Who am I? I spent a lot of my time welcoming and preaching to refugees. Some of those refugees heard the gospel message and felt the need to take it back home. So I trained them in theology. I taught them how to preach. I assessed their moral character, and if I felt they were ready, I gave them money and sent them off. And after they arrived, I prayed for them and wrote to them many letters to encourage them and check on how they were doing. Who do you think? John Calvin. That's a shock, isn't it? We don't normally think of Calvin as a sender of missionaries, but listen to this. By 1555, Calvin and his Geneva supporters had planted 5 churches in France. 4 years later, they had planted 100 churches in France. And by 1562, about 7 or 8 years later, Calvin's Geneva, with the help of some of their sister cities, had planted more than 2,000 churches in France. Calvin, in fact, was the leading church planter in Europe. He led the way in every part of the process. He trained, assessed, sent, counseled, corresponded with, and prayed for the missionaries and church planters he sent. One of his colleagues concluded that in the last 10 years of Calvin's life, missions was his absolute preoccupation. Well, that's a bit of a shock, isn't it? Because we don't think of Calvin like that at all. So, fellow Presbyterians, maybe we just don't know enough about John Calvin. Maybe we need to read a bit about him. You know, just like Calvin, all of us are called to be spreaders of the gospel. Sometimes the opportunities come along at strange moments when you don't expect them. A few years ago, I made a trip out to Tubby Tubby Island to finish off the work on some Old Testament books. I had this one purpose in mind. I didn't want to spend my time with anyone else but my translation committee. So I was sitting with my translation team under a house on Tubby Tubby Island doing some work on the Proverbs. They're a tough book to work on, really tough. And then someone interrupted us, came along and mentioned that there was some problem, a disturbance in the village. And immediately Isaiah, on our team, he's a pastor. Fred, who you saw in the picture, he's the government representatives for the two islands. And Reuben, he was the magistrate. They all got up and went on the track to see what the problem was. And that just left Fred's son, Ramsey, and I sitting there. And Fred's son got up and he went over into the kitchen to get something to eat. And I got up and stretched my legs and I stood at the bottom of the stairway. And just then, this woman ran past me and ran up the stairs of this house. That was the house I was staying in. And she ran up and closed the door, banged the door shut. And just then, through the bush came this man running with a bush knife, with his shirt off. He was puffing. He was quite a strong fellow. And he saw Ramsey in the kitchen, and he went after him, and he was swinging his bush knife at him. And Ramsey went straight through the wall and ran away. And then this man came up to me, and he was standing about a meter away from me, looking in my eyes, and I was looking in his eyes. And I have to admit, there was nothing going on in my brain. I was kind of in a shock. And he stood looking at me, and I stood looking at him for about 30 seconds. And I looked at the bush knife, and he was squeezing the bush knife, and his other hand was pumping, and his, he was blinking very quickly, and he was obviously thinking about what he was going to do, whether he was going to hit me with his bush knife or not. And so he kept looking at me, and I couldn't say anything. I was in shock. And then I noticed that Fred was coming off to the side, and Fred wasn't doing anything. He was just very quiet and just watching to see what was going to happen. And I don't know why, but I said to this man, his name was David, "David, give your bush knife to Fred and we'll go off and have a talk." And to my surprise and to Fred's surprise, he did. He gave the bush knife to him. I don't know what it was that stopped him. Maybe it was my white skin, or maybe it was just me. I've no idea. But I don't even know why I said those words. But he did. He gave the bush knife to Fred, and I took him down to the beach, and I told him about what a sacrifice Jesus had made for us. And then I spoke to him about how to be a good father and how to be a good husband. And then together we got to the point where we prayed together, and I was able to pray for him. And then I was able to take him back to the team, and they had a good talk to him, and I went off to speak to his wife in the house. Sometimes things happen when you don't expect them, in season and out of season. Even when we have another agenda, we need to be ready to talk about Jesus. We need to be ready to talk about Jesus to anyone, even those who looked different, even those who dressed differently. Well, remember the Bible passage we just had before about Philip the deacon? Well, Philip was ready. Most likely he was already tired from his experiences in Samaria, but he was ready to listen to what God's messenger had to say to him, and he obeyed. Then he listened carefully to what concerned this Ethiopian man. And then he earned the right to enter the chariot and tell the good news of Jesus. Now, as we look at this passage, we notice a few things. First, we notice how Luke refers to this man. He always calls him the Ethiopian, and then he refers to him as the eunuch, and then he mentions that he's an important man. Now, I've often wondered what Luke is trying to communicate to us in that description. Secondly, we notice, except for the command to get into the carriage, we notice that the dialogue of the Ethiopian is usually in the form of questions. How can I? Who is? And what is to hinder me or prevent me? Now, this third question is what I want to look at. What is there to hinder me from being baptized? Now, I think sometimes the modern versions skip over that word a little bit too lightly, this word hinder. This word in the Greek is the word koloue. It means to hinder or prevent or to block. And I think this word is very much full of meaning, and it's a clue to this man's emotional baggage. Faye and I were in Melbourne the other day, and we saw a young man standing on the bridge, and he had this bag around his neck, and he had a label on the bag, and it said, "Emotional baggage." Well, we thought that was pretty funny. But I guess a lot of people carry their emotional baggage around their neck. Well, as we look at this word a little bit more closely, perhaps Luke is hinting that this man has had a tough time in Jerusalem, this Ethiopian man. Well, let's face it, as Pauline says, he's different. Most likely very tall, with a very rich tone of African skin colour. Now, some scholars suggest that this man came from an area that today is actually Sudan. And so like the Sudanese we see in our community today, he was probably very conspicuous. Who knows what he might have encountered in Jerusalem? He may have been prevented from entering certain areas of the temple. And although he was a proselyte, someone who had accepted the Jewish faith, it's quite possible that his physical lack of wholeness precluded him from full Jewish membership. Although he probably knew Greek and could read the Septuagint, his ability to speak Hebrew might have meant some level of exclusion. We don't know. Well, the Jerusalem experience probably made him realize that he could never really be Jewish in the eyes of the Orthodox Jews of Judea. And just like Faye and I with our Wanawana friends, we could never really be Wanawana people. I sometimes feel awkward when people call me a translator. I'm not the translator. I'm the one who helps guide them along. They do the translating. They're the ones who come up with the words after we have a long discussion about the things that we're trying to translate. And Faye and I can never really be Wanawana people, no matter how much we master the grammar, no matter how much we master all the idioms, we can never really be Wanawana people. And so this Ethiopian, perhaps he came to realize that he could never be really Jewish in the eyes of these Jews of Judea. So when Philip explains the gospel to him and talks about baptism, he naturally asks, what is there to block my entry into the Christian faith? Now, the Bible scholars tell us that verse 37 is a late addition to the text. You might see it in your NIV as a footnote. Sometimes you'll see it in the King James as in the text. But clearly the ancient copyist wanted to make clear to his readers what Philip most likely told the Ethiopian in verse 35 when he told him the good news about Jesus. You see, Christianity has no physical tests or qualifications. It's about believing with all your heart that Jesus is our Lord and Savior, the Son of God. Nowadays, we have a significant number of refugees coming to Australia. How do we perceive them, and how do we react to them? Do we fully appreciate what it means to be conspicuous because of our skin colour or our body shape? Well, Faye and I have really experienced what it feels like to be different, to be the odd one out. I remember going down to Wari Island once to have a meeting with the people, and there was a bit of it was a rough meeting, and a few guys were yelling things that I couldn't quite understand, and I felt a little bit conspicuous that night. And sometimes when I've walked around on that island way down south, the little kids, you know, the little toddlers see me coming and they run because their parents have said something like, if you're naughty, I'll get the white man to come and belt you. And so here I was coming to give them their reward. But the warmth of our Wanawana friends has helped us to forget our conspicuousness. And that's how we can help immigrants feel welcome. We need to show interest in them and show them acts of kindness as well. On Sundays, Faye and I pick up an Iraqi lady from Baghdad, and we take her to church, and we take her to lunch, and on Wednesday evenings, we go and pick her up again, and we take her to Bible study. She has become a Christian and is still learning about Australian culture and Christianity. Life's pretty difficult for her because the Muslim community aren't too happy with someone who converts. And so we endeavour to listen to her stories about Iraqi culture, because listening to her, those stories that she tells us, is important to her. What about you? Are you a good listener? Or do you dominate the conversation? Does silence make you feel awkward? I think it makes us all feel a bit awkward, doesn't it? Well, if it does, why don't we try a little icebreaker and say something like, "Tell me about yourself." By being a good listener, we earn the respect of new friends. And then we can tell them the good news of Jesus, just as Philip did. And who knows, what we might say might affect many people, perhaps even a continent.